Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this St. Patrick's Day, Tuesday, March 17th. Currently 37 degrees here in Old Town Park City under bright sunny skies, 36 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We've got plenty of sunshine on the way today. You know, we had that northwesterly flow yesterday with a lot of clouds. The sky's beginning to clear today as that big, massive high-pressure ridge gets closer to the area. So in Park City, we're looking at high temperatures heating up. How about low 60s for us today in Park City? Should be a wonderful St. Patrick's Day. In the Heber Valley, we're talking temperatures approaching the upper 60s to near 70 degrees this afternoon with lots of sunshine. So again, some perfect weather. If you've got any outdoor plans as we go throughout today, the weather will definitely cooperate for us. Now, as we move into your Thursday and Friday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, we're looking at that high-pressure ridge getting much closer to the area. That will bring in much sunshine across the region. We're talking high temperatures warming to near 70 in Park City as we get into your Wednesday afternoon. We're talking mid-70s for us in the Heber Valley. But we're not done. How about Thursday? Mid-70s will be likely for high temperatures in Park City with highs right around 80 degrees for us in the Heber Valley. Again, with lots of sunshine, well above average temperatures expected. And we'll be in the mid-70s for us again in Park City as we get towards your Friday. You know, if we do hit those mid-70s, that will set a new all-time record high temperature for the month of March in Park City. The Heber Valley, same story for you. Highs will climb into the low 80s. Once we make our way above 80 degrees, that will set a new all-time record high for the month of March, even in the Heber Valley. So we're talking about some all-time record temperatures being set as we go throughout this week. We stay warm heading into the weekend with highs in the low to mid-70s in Park City. On your Saturday, upper 70s expected, near 80 in the Heber Valley. We will start to cool it down by next Sunday, though, at partly cloudy skies. We'll see highs back down into the mid-60s in Park City, still well above average, and highs in the low 70s in the Heber Valley, and a little cooler heading into next week with highs next Monday, low 60s for Park City, highs near 70 in the Heber Valley. That's a look at your latest forecast with the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Nikki. Good morning.
Good morning. So it was another quiet day in the backcountry. I don't think too many people are out traveling, so no new avalanches reported. We do have winds right now. We've seen gusts up to 100 miles per hour at the 11,000-foot ridge lines and then averaging closer to 40s and 50s. Mountain temps are about 10 degrees warmer than yesterday. A lot of trailheads didn't see a solid refreeze last night. This morning, though, we're going into a normal caution again today, so overall a generally low danger. We do want to be aware of the rising temperatures, and we'll likely to see wet snow start to occur in the afternoon as the temperatures rise, but winds will probably keep most of that at bay. We're more concerned about Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, starting to see more wet activity.
Okay, Nikki, thanks so much. Well, stay tuned. In just a minute, we'll be checking in with KPCW reporter Connor Thomas with a reaction to the Corey Richens guilty verdict. Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh later on with a preview of this week's County Council meeting. I'll be checking in with artist Kelly Gallagher and David Breslauer with the Park City Artists Association, telling us more about this weekend's Spring into Art show. And from Recycle Utah Executive Director Andy Heck, along with Park City Council Liaison Molly Miller with the latest from the Recycling Center. Joining me now in the studio, KPCW's Connor Thomas, who has covered the Corey Richens murder trial since it began February 23rd and ended yesterday when, just after 3 hours, the jury came to the verdict of guilty on all charges. Good morning, Connor.
Good morning.
So what's it going to feel like not to have your bum bound to the courtroom bench anymore?
I don't know. I'm still waking up at 8 a.m. and it's early. You know, this was scheduled to go 5 weeks until March 27th. So, you know, perhaps surprising for a couple of reasons. As you mentioned, just 3 hours of deliberation with some pretty complicated evidence.
Yeah. So you were in the courtroom when the verdict was read. What was the atmosphere like at that moment?
Very tense. The judge, Richard Mrozek, said it's his practice to ask the attorneys on both sides and the defendant to stand as he reads the verdict from the jury. And so that's what they did. The gallery, which has, since closing arguments, been reserved for family members and close friends of both sides, no members of the general public, was very quiet. Everyone, of course, had been strictly instructed not to react. And so, you know, you could hear a pin drop. And I did hear some some soft weeping behind me. I was on the front row, so I don't know exactly who that was, but obviously an emotional day for both sides.
Yeah, and you were sitting behind the defense table there, so I'm not sure whether or not you could see, but were you able to see Corey's reaction as the jury delivered the verdicts?
She just looked down. I checked the video later, and 'cause I was curious to see. Not much of a reaction, just looked down.
Yeah. What stood out to you, I guess, most emotionally or visually in the courtroom at that moment? Just maybe the weeping? And
yeah, just how quiet it was. I think I did expect something when the verdict was read, but it was very, very quiet. After we all left, neither side wanted to comment immediately after the verdict, but I saw Corey Richens' family members leave fairly quickly. Eric Richens' family members stayed and talked and embraced a while.
Yeah, were you able to talk to any of Eric's family members?
No, they had the media cordoned off in a particular part of the parking lot, so if folks wanted to come and speak with us, they could, or they could leave, and that's what most everybody elected to do.
Yeah, I know we had Corey's mom, Lisa Darden, follow. We knew who she was. Do you know who the other family members were?
Yeah, one of her brothers was there. She's got a few siblings, and so not everybody was there. But I believe her aunt Doreen was there, and some other members of the public who seemed like they got some of the access wristbands from her side of the family.
Yeah, so over the course of the jury, was there any evidence that seemed to have the biggest impact on the jury?
Well, we're going to have to ask jurors. I'm not quite sure. There's one piece of evidence where if folks have followed this murder trial very closely, I'm sure they would have been curious about how it was used, and that was a letter that Corey Richens wrote while she was in jail in September of 23 or 24, I believe. I'm getting the years mixed up at this point, but it was to her mother regarding what she would like her brother to say on the stand at trial. It became known as the Walk the Dog letter because it had Walk the Dog written on the top in all caps letters. That ended up being the prosecutor's sort of closer. They brought it up a little earlier in closing arguments yesterday morning to point to what they say was Corey Richens admitting that she did buy fentanyl, which is the alleged murder weapon, but just at her husband's request. Then at the end of the rebuttal in closing arguments, the chief prosecutor took the jury through 15 sentences of the Walk the Dog letter and kind of gave you his translation according to prosecutor's theory of the case to kind of unpack it for them.
Yeah. So there were people who don't think the prosecution here effectively proved that Corey gave Eric that deadly dose of fentanyl, but it didn't seem to matter with the eventual verdict.
I mean, the jury appeared to disagree. They found it beyond a reasonable doubt. That's the standard, and they're the ones who apply the standard in this case. Bloodworth, the chief prosecutor, did admit in closings that a lot of it is circumstantial evidence, but he says you can do a lot with circumstantial evidence and draw plenty of inferences and be convinced of something even with circumstantial evidence, and I think the jury appears to have agreed.
Will you be able to talk to any of the jurors?
I'm going to check with court staff. I'd certainly like to. It's always interesting to hear what their thoughts were with something so serious as this in the justice system, but it is their prerogative to talk or not to talk. They may be contacted by appellate attorneys or lawyers in the case. The judge also instructed them yesterday that it is their prerogative to talk to those folks or not, so we'll just have to see.
So what happens next for procedurally for Corey?
Sentencing. So the maximum sentence for the most serious charge here, aggravated murder, is 25 to life. And so sentencing is scheduled for May 13th. After that, she may appeal the verdict if she would like.
Okay. Any indications whether or not she'll appeal?
It's been, her lawyers have done a good job of preserving appellate issues throughout the case, objecting to certain evidence coming in, for example, essentially procedural things that an attorney on appeal could look at, because for folks who don't know, they're not going to retry the case again in the appeals courts. It'll just be reviewing were the procedures of the lower court correct. And so what her attorneys have been doing throughout the case is essentially flagging where they think the procedure was incorrect, and they've been doing that plenty. It looks like an appeal to me.
Yeah, so after covering this case day in, day out, I guess what was the most challenging part of telling the story?
It's labyrinthian. It really is, just because it's been going on for so long. The murder in this case happened in 2022. Corey Richens, of course, coming on your program in April of the next year and then being arrested in May. It's really been unfurling over many years. And while she was in custody with this letter that she wrote to her mother and things like that, it took more turns. And so it's a tough thing to distill for somebody in one story, but you know, I'm sure folks will write books. We have plenty of true crime documentarians at the courthouse in Summit County right now. So, you know, there will be other ways to tell this story going forward.
All right. Any other thoughts?
Just thanks for folks who tuned in and followed the coverage. It's a very serious topic, an important topic to see how, you know, our local justice system handles something like this, because it does not happen in our community every day.
Thank goodness.
Of course, going to keep covering this as it goes through appeal and sentencing and things like that. So,
okay. Well, great job.
Thanks.
That's KPCW reporter Connor Thomas. Well, the Wasatch County Council meets tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock, and on the phone with a preview of the meeting is County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
First, let's start with just an update on the water situation, Dustin. I was out at the Jordanelle a couple of weeks ago and have never seen that lake so low. So without much runoff expected this spring, how concerned is Wasatch County?
It's a great deal of concern, I think, to everyone in the community. I think projections right now estimate that we'll receive somewhere between 20 and 80% of normal runoff, with the estimates leaning towards the low end of that spectrum. So I think we feel like unless we get a lot of moisture over the next few months, we're in for a very dry summer. And that presents a lot of challenges around not just water delivery, but also wildfire risk and construction nuisance and other things like that. When it's dry, a lot of things are have a lot of challenges.
Yeah, and I guess kind of the irony of all of this is that because it was so dry this winter, more water has to be pulled out, for the East Village to make snow there, and yet that's just kind of like dried up, and if it hasn't already, I mean, it will be by Saturday. So yeah, that's certainly going to be on the low end of runoff there. What does that mean? I mean, are you starting to talk about conservation plans, anything like that?
I think it's what steps are going to be necessary. The county itself doesn't provide water resources. We do through our special service districts. Those special service districts, some of them have, you know, water rights that are fed through the Jordanelle. As long as the Jordanelle has water to distribute, you know, I think it shouldn't be too much of an issue. There are basically water rights that are order of what water comes first, and then if there is not enough water, it kind of comes off the top. And so it's those people who have those rights on the top that'll be most affected, and those tend to be things like loss of agricultural land. We'll see animals being, you know, taken to other places where maybe there is some pasture, those types of challenges.
I know that council started talking about the wildfire season and fireworks ban a few weeks ago. Were any decisions made at that point?
Not yet. Again, I think we're coming up pretty soon to the time when we are going to be able to make some decisions, but generally, unless something changes, we foresee the need to do some prohibitions to make sure that there isn't, you know, a lot of wildfire. And there are a lot of challenges with that, because if we ban fireworks in even places like municipalities, people tend to take them to more dangerous places and use them. So it can be helpful to kind of balance those competing interests.
All right, taking a look at the agenda, it looks like the council will discuss parks and recreation impact fees. What's being proposed?
So right now, Wasatch County, we have been in the process of updating our impact fees. It's kind of an ongoing thing that we want to make sure that we stay on top of, so that we're adequately and fairly accounting for the costs of development. So right now, we're proposing some increased parks and recreation impact fees. These fees are assessed against residential homes, trying to account for if we were to maintain our level of service. So this is like the acres of park per resident per capita, if we were to maintain that for every new, how much money do we collect in order to maintain that service? So there are potentially significant increases. You know, we're looking at close to doubling that rate, a little over $3,000 per unit. But that's ultimately a policy decision of the county council. That's one of the things we wanted to discuss with them of, do they want to go with the most aggressive options? And if not, how do we fill that gap and make sure that we are still providing a quality level of service?
So the current impact fee is at about $1,500 a unit? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I think it's a little over that.
Okay, but up to maybe $3,000 a unit.
Yeah.
Okay, so how will these increased fees be spent if, in fact, they go into effect?
So impact fees are a highly regulated revenue source for any entity. What we have to do is create what's called an impact fee facilities plan. And so that says over the next 7 years, which is the time horizon that you have to be able to collect and then use impact fees, we have to outline which projects are going to be eligible in that facilities plan. So the things that we've talked about are some of the new parks that are coming out along 2400 East in the Heber Valley area, as well as improvements to existing facilities to increase the capacity of those facilities. So that might be like additional pickleball courts. And I think that they have been planning for an additional regional park that was included in our previous impact fee facilities plan, but not one we were able to achieve just yet.
All right, the council will also review a preliminary financial report. Is this a look at the first quarter of the budget?
Yeah, so this will actually be, because we get our revenues 2 months after the fact from the state, this will be an unaudited year-end financial statement for 2025. Overall, the year ended stronger than we expected. A lot of our revenues kind of ticked up at the last couple months of the year. So we kind of remain a strong financial position, and that's actually been borne out through our debt issuance process that we also have had our rating upgraded as we've gone through this process. So the county is now rated a AA+ as a financial asset.
All right. So given the increasing price of gasoline, what does that mean for Wasatch County? I mean, you've got, of course, a fleet of cars and trucks to fill.
Yeah, there are certainly expenses associated with that. It's something that we always watch. The biggest impacts are to places like Public Works, where we do have those larger vehicles. Thankfully, or maybe not thankfully, because of the light winter, we have some excess budget savings from the lack of snow removal that we've had to undertake. So we think overall from a budget perspective, we'll largely be okay. Sheriff's Office is another high consumer of fuel expenses. And so that's something that we do tend to pay attention to. And we may end up making some adjustments mid-year, depending on how things go over the next few months.
All right. Also, is a general plan discussion on the agenda. Anything about this in particular?
Yeah, so last week we actually talked with the county council about some proposed land use plans. And they gave us some feedback, and we wanted to come back and present with them. What the overall impression is this is part of the general plan update process. And we feel like we're at a point where we are getting kind of the last few bits of input necessary to create a complete draft of the general plan. This is a high level plan that does include the specifics of how many units per acre. But what it does do is it sets out, here are the places where we view it being most dense to least dense, and not without diving into the hows and the what fors. And that's been a little bit difficult for both the public and the council to grapple with, seeing what does this look like in abstract versus what will it look like when we are done with what will the next step will be, which is the code rewrite, which does get into those more specifics. So what we're seeing is a direction from the council to overall try to ensure that we are being responsible stewards of the unincorporated portion of the county, and to not be overly accommodating of growth, particularly in portions like the East Heber Valley or other places like that, to continue to preserve the mountainous areas of the county and the north fields for agricultural uses. That was, I think, one takeaway that they gave us last week that we wanted to incorporate this week, is do more to encourage and promote agricultural activities.
All right. The Wasatch County Council recently changed the interlocal meeting schedule. It appears that you're meeting less frequently now with Heber City and Midway. Do you intend to collaborate more with Summit County going forward?
Yeah, actually, last year we started. So the direction from the county council has been to, yes, have fewer broad interlocal meetings. We used to meet on a quarterly basis with all of the entities. But what we felt like is that many of those issues tended to be one-to-one issues. So it was an issue between Wasatch County and Heber City, or Heber City and another entity. And so we felt like we could actually be more productive by having more one-on-one meetings. So last year we started having these annual interlocal meetings with one entity. So we scheduled Summit County to come to the senior center kind of mid-year last year. We're expecting to go up there kind of later this year to do, to reciprocate and continue that. But what we're hoping to do is that we have these semi-annual interlocal meetings that are maybe a little bit more involved, a little more focused. And what we are going to do is actually encourage people to register in advance. We're going to provide food to the attendees and try and make it a little bit more discussion focused and drive a lot more things. In the past, it's been very open of people just kind of, hey, what do people want to talk about? I think now we're coming with more of a specific, hey, we're going to talk about the Olympics. We're going to talk about local land use plans. We're going to talk about open space preservation. And we feel like by being a little bit more proactive, we can actually make it more useful and honestly, we hope better attended by more entities.
Okay. Wanted to ask you quickly, what was the latest with the Gun Club Road, a deal that was struck between Wasatch and Summit County done outside of a public meeting?
So my understanding, Summit County has been working with the developer. So this is a developer that's kind of on the very northeast corner of the Jordan L Basin area. That they have largely reached an agreement to basically pave the road and realign a section of it so that just past the gun club, it would actually connect up into 248. So that this would, I think, address the issue of traffic going in front of the residences as you get closer to like Democrat Alley area. And instead it would drive the traffic towards the higher traffic roads and provide a paved access that I think suits everyone's needs. So that's kind of the direction that, as far as I understand it, Wasatch County is kind of an ancillary party to a lot of this because this road is in Summit County. It's really the Summit County Council that needs to be comfortable with the arrangement. And I think over the last, gosh, it's been, you know, over maybe approaching two and a half years of discussions of figuring out how to make sure we meet everyone's needs in that circumstance.
Okay. Anything else, Dustin, you wanted to mention?
I don't think not this morning.
Okay. Thanks so much. Well, the Park City Artists Association hosting the third annual show this weekend. In the studio with details, I have members of the Artists Association, Kelly Gallagher, along with David Breslauer. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Aaron Gobra.
So, Kelly, when and where?
So, it's going to be running. It's at the Doubletree. So, old timers like us will call it the Yarrow, right? But it's running Friday from 3 to 7, Saturday from 10 to 6, and Sunday noon to 4.
Okay. Is there a fee?
No, it's a free show, and you can park at the hotel for free, and we really welcome everybody to turn out and come see all the art.
Okay. So are you adding a day? Was it just 2 days last year, or is it
Yeah, so it was 3 days last year, so we wanted to follow with that this year and give everybody a lot of opportunity to come.
Okay. David, how many artists are participating?
I guess Kelly probably knows that number better than I do, but it's roughly 20 artists or so.
Yeah, we have 27 right now this year.
Okay, and how were they selected?
We did an open call for membership through the PCAA first, and then after a little bit, we found we weren't quite filling it, so we opened it up to the entire community. So we have artists that are non-members who elected to join us this year. Oh. And if I could say, we actually have one booth still open, so if there's any artist out there, particularly an emerging artist, and you'd like to get a chance, give me a call, because we could still fit you into the show.
Okay. Is there a fee to participate?
There is a fee to rent the booth, yes.
Okay. And that's good for all 3 days?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Yeah. What is it that you're looking for in terms of putting the artists together? I mean, it sounds like anybody who wanted to could participate.
Right. You know what? We are really looking for any kind of a forum to allow local artists to exhibit their work. And so we have this fabulous space at the Yarrow, and so we take this opportunity. And the cool thing about having this show in March, it's going to kind of set off the show season, because it's still a little too cold to be doing an outdoor show.
Okay, so David, can you give us an idea of what will be on display?
Well, we've got, it's a really eclectic, eclectic group of artists. We've got photography, we've got paintings, jewelers, we've got three-dimensional art, we've got sculptures. It's just, you name it, it's there. So if you're looking for something for your wall or something for your house or something for a friend, this is a great place to come and find something really, really nice. It's a great collection of work.
Okay, what are you going to be?
I'm a photographer.
Mm-hmm. So
and I shoot landscapes and wildlife.
Okay, and everything in terms of what you got framed and ready to go, or
I have framed prints and ready to go pieces, and a lot of the other artwork is ready to set on your furniture or hang on your wall. And I also have less expensive unframed pieces that you can buy as well.
Okay, and what about you, Kelly?
I'm a steel artist, so I will have sculptures and wall hangings to offer. And yeah, it's going to be a nice venue. I'm very pleased always at the quality of the work we get from our local artists.
All right, so everything's for sale.
Everything's for
yes.
sale.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how this is different from what the PC Create shop offers?
Yeah, that's a great question, Leslie. So with the Arts Council and Create, we all have an opportunity to show just a few of our pieces, because Create likes to open it up to as many artists as possible, right? So we can have an entire booth and we can show our entire collection of work if we've got it. And then the other thing that we do is we have a scholarship that PCAA always awards to a Park City High School student every year. And so one of the booths this year and every year is donated works that people can buy, and 100% of the proceeds go towards our scholarship. Okay. So that's also different than Create.
Okay, yeah. Very nice. How much you hope to raise with that?
Oh, you know, we like to give about $2,500 of a scholarship. We usually hit the mark.
All right. Have you started to see some of that work trickle in for that community scholarship?
We have. We have earned a little bit. We also sell ornaments, so we have kind of run the gamut of art.
More seasonal, but
yeah. We have some of the art has been trickling in, and then some of the artists participating in the show will probably just arrive with pieces to offer.
Okay, and then I mean from the students themselves, are they starting to submit their portfolio for consideration?
I think they probably are doing that internally with the high school. We generally get the portfolios offered to us to help judge towards the end of March, early April.
Okay, so is that what your board makes the decision, what student would get that scholarship?
Actually, Park City High School makes the decision, and we just provide some recommendations based on the applications that we receive.
Okay, you mentioned it is an association, and so it's member-based. Tell me a little bit about why an artist would want to be a member of the Artists Association.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're a social and advocacy group. We have about 60 members. It floats 60, 70 a year. And really what we're trying to do is promote local artists in their growth and provide opportunities to do shows like this, and to actually give educational opportunities to learn how to critique art, to learn how to show their art, things like that. You know, we just finished a show at the Park City Library that we do. It was a really successful show. We got good feedback on how well it was curated. And then we also try to do additional shows. We've got another one later this year down at Red Butte.
Well, it's a great way to learn from other artists as well, which is why I became a member.
Okay, and membership fees are annual or?
Yeah, they're annual, and it's about $50, and it's really a great value because we have our website. We're plugged in really well with Jocelyn and the Arts Council. We try to support them as much as possible and give everybody as many opportunities as we can.
Okay, so in addition to the art this weekend, I mean, you have any live music? I know there's a restaurant on site.
Yes, the hotel has a restaurant and a little cafe. We may have some music, piped in during the venue.
Okay. Let's see, anything else you want to mention?
No, and I won't talk specifically, but we've had some really, really awesome sponsors help us be able to do this event and to get some advertising for the local populace to be able to see it. So I wanted to thank all those sponsors and really appreciate that.
Okay. Again, the third annual Spring into Art art show this weekend at the Doubletree Yarrow, Friday 3 to 7, Saturday 10 to 6, and Sunday 12 to 4. Kelly, David, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
In the studio now with an update from Recycle Utah, I have Executive Director Andy Heck. He's joined by Park City Council Liaison to Recycle Utah, Molly Miller. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So, Andy, we have been hearing about the new Recycle Utah Center for a while now. What's the latest on the project?
Well, we're still working with the city to pass this final conveyance agreement. It's in the works. Big shout out to the city. Luke Carton's amazing. City Council has been really helpful. We'll have a lot more news on the future of the future facility coming up here within a few weeks. Big plug for our April 22nd Earth Day celebration at Twisted Fern. That's where we are expecting to do a very big detailed update of what the new facility will be, all the plans surrounding it, and it's really exciting.
Okay, so at this point, because you don't have the property, you really haven't put out bids or anything for work that needs to be done? Are you collecting those, or?
Well, we're working with an architect, and we have a great architectural advisory board that's been helping us, and we're going through the schematic plans, and, you know, with so many things in the air that are still figuring out, we're looking at, hey, how do we use the space for a temporary facility while we work to develop our permanent future home, which we're designing it to be a true hub of sustainability for Summit County. There's going to be a lot going on in that space, and like I said, we're really excited to show the plans that we're working on.
Okay. Maybe just talk a little bit about how, when the new facility does open, how it's going to improve the recycling services compared to what you have and can offer today.
Yeah, if your show goes on for an hour, I can talk about all the ways we benefit. One of the biggest changes is just adding value to the whole system. Right now on this amazing little lot that we've been running this awesome program for 35 years, we don't have the space to store material. Now, that causes a few problems, but the biggest one is it devalues the material. We have to ship it LTL, it's less than truckload. And we can't store it and play the market. Certain things like cardboard are viewed as a commodity, so the prices go up and down. And as soon as you can save that to where the prices go up and you can load an entire truckload, you're getting a lot more money out of the system of collecting recyclable materials.
Sure. So any new materials or services that residents will be able to recycle once, you know, you're up and running?
I don't know about new material. There are a few things that are on my list. Right now we have, well, I think the last count was 47 different waste streams coming out of our facility. There's a lot of potential for others to be added to it. But some of the other areas that I'm really excited are more of that hub of sustainability. We'll have an education program, simple things like durable ware to rent out for nonprofits to do all of our board meetings and fundraisers that we have. You can come grab wine glasses, water cups, plates, silverware, bring it back to us. We'll dishwash it, and it won't be cost prohibitive to use durable ware in all of your programming.
Okay. Do we have a projected opening date at this point?
I wish. We'll get closer to that as we solidify our plans moving forward. It's right now most important to be looking at our temporary facility so then we can go out and really build the facility of what the board, the staff, and the community is looking at.
Okay, and I heard that you've made some changes to the center. What's changed?
We've made just a few changes in preparation for a project that the city, Rocky Mountain Power, UDOT. It's the undergrounding of those electrical lines overhead. They need to move the fence on our backside 7.5 feet into the property. So we were just preparing for that. It doesn't impact us all that much, but it did require some thinking ahead through a few things.
Okay, let's bring Molly Miller into the conversation. You serve as the liaison between Park City Council and Recycle Utah. So what does that mean?
That means I get to be a kind of an observer as a board member for Recycle Utah. I had my first meeting with that board last week, and it was really incredible for me. I really got an insider view on how thoughtfully Andy is leading this process for the new facility, how really thoughtful and grounded in how beneficial it can be for the community. I think that was like one of the coolest things I got to observe and listen to as they worked through that. Other than that, it's being a kind of like a go-between, informing Andy about certain things, and Andy, as part of my service on the board, I can absorb what's happening there and relay that back to the city. And if there's anything that's dropping, I can make sure that we're nudging it. Even things like getting that land conveyance, like reminding someone, oh yeah, we want to get this done within the next few weeks. So what are the things that I can make sure that we're remembering to do? So just certain kind of like a little go-between is how I'm seeing it at this moment.
Yeah, I think the goal behind all of this, of course, the city needs the property to redevelop that road, but also, I mean, it's an opportunity here to increase the kind of dismal waste diversion. And talk to us a little bit about how the city kind of hopes that's going to happen. Because I think we're at like, what, 12%, Andy? In terms of
you know, that percentage is, it's really hard to calculate. Mm-hmm. And to get that number, I would invite Tim Loveday and Lou mm-hmm. Carton and all the great minds in waste diversion to come together and say, okay, here is the official number. Mm-hmm. It can be better.
Yeah. Okay.
And we do know that the landfill is running out of room. So City Council in October 25, City Council approved a waste ordinance, and it will add requirements for businesses within 84060 and waste haulers to include recycling as part of their business licensing process. So that will actually help us start to build a baseline, and everybody will need to register with the city and identify which items you are hauling and diverting. Andy and Recycle Utah are going to be a really instrumental piece of this in gauging how much weight haulers are dropping off and being able to report back and check in, just reporting some pretty basic data and metrics that can get, I think perhaps the goal is to get a little more in depth with the new facility. But we will know the amounts that people are diverting and whether they're diverting food waste or cardboard. And there's a couple of a couple of critical pieces that people will need to know about, business owners. And so to that end, there are a number of upcoming information sessions. And this is, the next one is the 18th, Wednesday, March 18th, 4:00 in the Park City Library. And that is in person. There's another in-person session on Tuesday, March 24th. And all of this information, including details on the ordinance, are on parkcity.gov/, let's see, you can just search waste, and I can't see the exact, but it's like slashed waste removal, I believe is the website. But go to the parkcity.gov website, search waste. It's the first thing that comes up.
Okay.
And it is important for business owners. There'll be a number of outreach methods employed, but there is information right now.
Okay, that March 24th is also at 4:00?
Let me check here. I believe so. It is March 24th, 9 a.m., forgive me. March 24th, in person, 9 a.m., Park City Library, room 101.
Okay. And I'm guessing that business licenses are renewed annually, so that means that you're not going to get a license unless you abide by these new regulations?
That's correct. You are going to have to let us know which items you're hauling and which label bins you service and the amounts hauled. You have to contract with an authorized waste hauler or provide proof of participating in a shared waste program through a master association or self-haul. And when you self-haul, you'll check in with Andy and the Recycle Utah staff. They will scan you in, estimate your weight, or give you that weight with the new system, and then you can report that back to the city. The city can double check with Andy.
Okay, on Main Street, we already have that, I think, biweekly recycling truck that picks up. People can drop off their own recycles. Will that continue?
Yes, the services will continue as they are now. The idea is to get more businesses to opt in to divert the things that are most filling the landfill, whether that's cardboard or food waste.
All right, and so this means just at both of the resorts as well. I mean, I know Park City is pretty committed to taking care of the waste on their mountain, but there's lots of shops and such, you know, at the base area.
Yes. Yes, all businesses in 84060, it will be applicable to.
Okay. Andy, let's talk about a couple of upcoming events. What have you got coming on?
Yeah, spring is an amazing time for sustainability and waste reduction. It's great, these events coming up. Number one that people are always asking about is our Household Hazardous Waste Collection Days. That's at Silver King Lot at Park City Mountain on April 25th. So Silver King Lot, April 25th, Household Hazardous Waste Collection. Bring your paints, solvents, electronics, just all the hard to recycle stuff. It's absolutely critical to keep these out of the landfill. I'd like to mention our Earth Day celebration coming up. That's April 22nd. Tickets are on sale now. They are $75 per ticket. Get them before April, the price goes up. We always sell out at this event, so April 22nd at Twisted Fern. And then I just want to give a good plug to the Race for Zero Waste Forum. This is a forum that travels around the country. We are lucky to be hosting them here in Park City. That's April 21st through the 23rd. So overlapping that Earth Day, Race to Zero Waste.
Okay. And what about Dumpster Days? Do you have those dates scheduled?
Yeah, we do. Dumpster Days will be April 30th through May 2nd. Those are big dumpsters for anything too large that fits in your bin. You can bring it down. We'll be in the parking lot of the Boneyard. Thank you. Big shout out to the Boneyard for letting us do this. We'll have a dumpster for large items, and we'll have a dumpster for all yard waste. So bring all your yard waste or big items down there, April 30th through May 2nd.
All right. Anything else you guys want to mention?
No, this is great. Thank you for inviting us on. I love being able to update the community with what we have going on because there's so much going on. Always check our website, recycleutah.org. You can go there to get tickets or to find information on what is recyclable, what we carry, what we're doing, what's going on. And thank you for having us.
Okay. Andy Heck, Molly Miller, thank you.
Thank you.
A Summit County jury has found Corey Richens guilty of murder just hours after deliberation yesterday. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the Camas area mom and former real estate agent can now face up to life in prison.
The jury returned a verdict after just 3 hours of deliberation.
Count one, aggravated murder. We, the jury, unanimously find that the defendant, Corey Richens, is guilty of aggravated murder.
Just outside Park City, Utah, 3rd District Judge Richard Mrazek read the verdict Monday before friends and family of Corey Richens and her late husband, as well as members of the press.
The homicide was committed for pecuniary gain, and the homicide was committed by means of the administration of any substance administered in a lethal amount, dosage, or quantity.
Richens was facing 5 charges and found guilty on all of them. 8 Summit County jurors, 6 men and 2 women, convicted Corey Richens of the March 2022 murder of her husband, Eric Richens, with a lethal dose of fentanyl. They found her guilty of attempted murder, having tried to poison him weeks before that on Valentine's Day. She was also convicted of forgery and 2 counts of insurance fraud stemming from a life insurance policy she took out on her husband's life and then cashed after his murder. The case has garnered widespread media attention since Richens published and promoted a children's book about grieving a parent's death in the month before her May 2023 arrest. She maintained her innocence and had been held at the Summit County Jail ever since. Now she faces 25 years to life in prison. Sentencing is scheduled for May 13th. Over the past 3 weeks, Summit County prosecutors put 42 witnesses on the stand to build their case against her. Richens' attorneys did not mount a defense case, but did say repeatedly that prosecutors could not prove how Richens administered the fatal fentanyl to her husband. Defense attorney Wendy Lewis reiterated that during Monday's closing arguments, and she called Summit County's investigation, quote, sloppy and driven by bias.
Everything about this investigation was led by the Richens family. They started on day one, and they continued until trial. They are the ones who initially hired and paid for experts. their private investigator gave information to the police.
Summit County's chief prosecutor, Brad Bloodworth, asked the jury for a conviction. He portrayed Corey Richens as an incompetent businesswoman who lied first to cover up debt and later to hide a murder she committed in large part because of that debt.
Corey Richens clings to the facade that has enabled her to get away with so much for so long. And despite all the evidence, Corey Richens doubles down and blames Eric. She is intensely ambitious. See through her facade, check her ambition. Do not let her get away with murder.
While Richens waits for sentencing in the murder case, she still faces 26 felonies in another case prosecutors filed last June. The charges represent the full scope of her alleged financial misdeeds. It's unclear whether prosecutors still plan to pursue that case. Utah State Court's communications director, Tanya Mashburn, said neither side would comment directly after the verdict Monday. And in civil court, Richens is litigating property issues with Eric Richens' family. The family is pursuing claims against her under the Slayer statute in Utah law, which says it's illegal for someone to inherit property from the person they killed. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Two people are dead after a crash on U.S. 40 in Wasatch County on Saturday. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on that.
Utah Highway Patrol Lieutenant Cameron Roden says the crash happened at about 2:30 p.m. Saturday.
We had a box truck that was traveling eastbound on Highway 40 and went off the road to the right and overcorrected back to the left. And as it came back to the left, it actually crossed over to the center line and hit a vehicle, which was a Chevy pickup truck, going the opposite direction.
The crash was near Mile Post 51 on US 40 near Strawberry Reservoir. The two people in the westbound pickup truck, a 39-year-old man and a 34-year-old man, were both killed. No information was available about where the two people were from. The cab of the box truck detached in the collision, and the cab rolled upside down. The driver of the box truck was transported to the hospital. Roden says the cause of the crash is under investigation.
There were some high winds at the time, so we're looking at that as a potential contributor.
The National Weather Service placed much of Wasatch County under a high wind warning Saturday, with gusts over 65 miles per hour expected across large swaths of the state. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And public open houses could begin in April to review conceptual designs for new recreation amenities on two Snyderville Basin recreation sites. But the project would require voter approval of a bond before they could move forward. With roughly 1,000 new residential units approved in the 84098 zip code, the Rec District is planning for additional facilities. Basin Rec Executive Director Robert Parrish says the district's partnering with Columbus Pacific on what's known as the Klein Dolly property to build an indoor aquatics facility on county-owned land near Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. In addition, he says the Recreation District owns 100 acres in Silver Creek Village where indoor field spaces, fitness classes, and workout areas could be built.
The district has grown. The field house is overused. I'm consistently and constantly hearing, you know, that people are complaining that they have to wait a half an hour to get on a treadmill. And it's well used, well loved, and it really is an anchor point for fitness and recreation in the district. But as the district's grown, we know that we have additional stuff that's coming to Kimball Junction, particularly with the Dakota Pacific development. The county's planning on putting some additional housing. So in the next few years, we're going to see an additional 1,000 units.
He says it's still too early to know how large a bond the district might seek.
What we're working with the designers is programming this space to where we can go for a bond for an anchor facility, basically get the basic building constructed, and then using other fund sources over a couple of years or even during the project to phase it to where we're not relying 100% on bond money to build everything, that we do have a phased plan to build it out.
Once conceptual designs are finished, he says the district will host open houses and later hold hearings before the Summit County Council. Mid-August is the deadline for the County Council to approve the bond documents if the measure is to appear on November's ballot.